Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky. In studio with me, Rich Sokol and State Senator Greg Brophy, Joshua Sharp behind the glass. And we are pleased to be joined by Isaac Smith, who, along with a couple of other guys in Colorado, but with Isaac doing a lot of the heavy lifting, exposed the Colorado Democracy Alliance, sometimes called CODA, and the what came to be called the Colorado Model, a term that Fred Barnes coined when he wrote an article about the impact that left-wing Democrat organizing had in Democrat success here in Colorado. Welcome to the show, Isaac.
Thanks for having me, Ross.
Why don't we just jump in with your explaining to the listeners what CODA and the Colorado Model are, and we'll go from there.
Well, the short answer is essentially that the left, they finally decided to work together, and they brought efficiency to their outreach efforts, and they found new ways to target voters and to get people to the polls and to work so they didn't overlap in their activities. So they essentially brought efficiency to their side of the aisle. And now how they do that, you know, they do that with better data collection, coordination among groups, and I want to direct people, you know, everybody's heard of the blueprint. They should read that. But also the Colorado Statesman just had an article on October 22nd about Colorado campaign finance. And if you read that, it's really a web of organizations that are effectively managed to get out the vote for messaging, for building the bench, for fundraising. And they do it in such a way that they essentially keep a lot of the donors' fingerprints off of it. That's kind of the key aspect of this. They keep some of the donors' fingerprints off of it, but they also redirect their resources more efficiently than the right does.
So, and you know what, I just read this article that you mentioned. It's called Campaign Finance in Colorado, Where's the Money? And I'll link to it at my website at rossputin.com so people can get to it. One thing I noticed that's very interesting to me, I mean, a lot of people have heard about the so-called four horsemen of the Democrats, Gill, Stryker, Polis, and Rutt Bridges, you know, multi-millionaires who have given a lot of money to support left-wing candidates and issues, although Polis has sort of backed out of a lot of that now that he's in Congress. But one thing I notice is this list of huge donors to these groups is it's lots and lots of unions. It's
exactly
all about the unions and the Democratic Party. At least that's how I read it. Is that your take as well?
Absolutely, because the unions and their members, they are the foot soldiers that really get out the vote. I mean, they train their people up, and they use their dues to contribute to these various groups and individuals or candidates. And the unions are huge because they have a very direct vested interest in getting involved and affecting change, and they have the manpower. That's the difference between the left and the right. The right, we really don't have that same sort of like massive manpower that the unions can wield to get people out knocking on doors.
So actually, let me ask Greg Brophy a question here. I mean, out in your district, which is rather more rural, it's less of an issue. But as someone who's closely involved with looking at and trying to help many other Senate candidates win, what have you seen, especially in this cycle now? I mean, did you see the impact of these groups in this cycle as big as we all know it was in the previous cycle?
Of course we saw the impact. Although I would say this, that I also saw a couple of the teachers' union groups spending money in seats where the polls were just too far apart, and I thought it was terribly out of character for these Democrats because they had brought, as Isaac said, a measure of efficiency to campaigning in Colorado back in 2004 that didn't exist before. I mean, in the past, you know, the favorite candidate of the you know, soon to be speaker, the existing speaker, or the favorite candidate of the party head honchos often got funding, whether they really deserved it or not. It wasn't based on polling like it should be, and the way they started doing it in 2004. This year, we saw them spending tens of thousands of dollars in two races where they didn't have a chance to win, and I thought that was out of character for them in Colorado. But at the same time, of course, come August, when the campaign finance report for the month of August is filed at the end of the month. You can look at the Democrats' campaign finance reports and see that almost every one of these Democrat candidates in hotly contested races got $4,000 contributions from 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, even 10 unions in some cases, all of a sudden raising $40,000 when, you know, our candidates work all summer to raise money to get to that level, because we can only raise money at $400 per person in a contribution, whereas unions, because they're considered small donor committees, can give it $4,000 per person. So we see them doing that, and then we see the organization that they have to get out the vote on the weekend before and the couple of days running up to the election, plus the time they spent chasing their absentee ballots in the previous 3 weeks before the election. That is often done by paid people, which takes some money, some of their organization money, and often done by union folks from other states. If you're out walking precincts with state senators, you'll see folks from, you'll see cars with four kind of burly looking guys hop out of them with license plates from, you know, some Midwestern state walking here in Colorado.
So Isaac, you know, with that kind of description of what's happened here, when you and I were talking off air, I mean, you have some thoughts about maybe what conservatives / Republicans can do to counter this extremely effective organization that the left has put together.
Well, absolutely. I think the right, they really need to come. I mean, even though they are aware of what's going on, I don't think we've been battered enough to decide to take action on our own side, because they're, I believe on the right, it's still a bunch of fiefdoms that, you know, normally are battling each other rather than battling their common enemy. Because now, after the election, if on the right trends hold as they have in the past, the right will disband and will not talk to each other for another year until the lead up for the next election. But really, we have to decide, are we going to start playing more of a strategic game and start at least pooling some of our resources and trying to work strategically, or are we going to continue to maintain the circular firing squad? Because I will maintain that the left, even though they took big hits this election, they have invested in their infrastructure to where they will have the structural advantage on us in another 2 years, maybe when the Tea Party is not paying as close of attention. And in 2 years, the races that we're going to be, you know, that we're going to be fighting are the state House and Senate, and I would say the 7th CD with Perlmutter. And I think that'll be a test to see if the right recognizes the call to get organized and to start working together better.
Well, hopefully we can. You know, we certainly are, I think, to a pretty good extent, a lot of it because of the work that you have done, because of the work that Whitwer and Schrager did in writing the blueprint, which I highly recommend to everybody. I bought it as soon as you could get it on Kindle and just devoured that thing. It's really exciting because you know most of the characters, you know who the players are, and you're just thinking to yourself, yep, that's exactly what we did wrong. They nailed it, and that's exactly what you ought to be doing to do it right, to get it back up and going. And it's going to take that combination, though. It's not enough just to know how to do it. You also have to be able to put together the funding required to perform all of these tasks. For instance, you could easily run to $1 million per campaign cycle to run the get out the vote machine that they have, where you pay people to do the walk-in. You pay people over the course of an entire summer to call unaffiliated voters and find out what it is that makes them tick, so that you'll know whether that's the kind of person that you want to spend your time getting to the polls or not. And this next race in Colorado is going to be very interesting. We're going to have a presidential race. I assume that Colorado will again be a swing state, which means there'll be a lot of get out the vote money coming in here.
Sure.
But we won't have a U.S. Senate race at the top of the ballot the next time around. And we're back to the drawing board on these congressional districts, because we're going to redistrict this spring in the legislature. I hope that it doesn't go to a judge. But we're going to redistrict this spring in the legislature. And who knows what will happen with, for instance, the 7th Congressional District. Will it become more Republican or more Democrat, or will they, you know, keep it as it's designed right now to be one-third, one-third, and one-third? It's going to be an interesting cycle, of course.
Exactly. And I would say the Republicans, really, they need to start taking, instead of just one election cycle view, they need to start taking at minimum a 4 to 6 year view or more to plan their resources and try to map out this chessboard that the left has been so effectively navigating. And I think that's critical. Instead of just this, you know, the 96-hour campaign or the 100-hour campaign, whatever it was this year, we need to start taking a longer view and investing more in infrastructure to build that base of support, instead of just relying on everybody to come out of the woodwork in the lead up to the election, and then just saying goodbye to each other before, you know, or after the election's over. We got to stay engaged after the election. We can't just go home and pout because we lost a few elections. We got to get up and stay engaged and keep building that infrastructure for 2 years down the road.
You know, I think part of this, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment after Isaac has left us, is whether the Tea Party movement will have a lasting effect of keeping people engaged in politics where they might otherwise have lost interest in the way that you're describing, Isaac. But I'm pretty concerned that, as Greg has mentioned, that all of this talk about what we need to do sort of emotionally, it's almost irrelevant until the financial rules are changed in a way that allows Republicans to compete on an essentially even playing field. Isaac, I'll give you the last 15 seconds here.
Well, I think that's a big concern, and I think we do need to raise those minimum contribution limits in Colorado. That 400 limit, that just allows groups to manipulate the system instead of without transparency.
Isaac Smith, thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for educating our listeners a bit on the Colorado Democracy Alliance. I will link at rossbutin.com to the article Isaac mentioned, and I do encourage you all to check out the blueprint. Thanks again, Isaac. Stay with us right here on Backbone Radio on News Talk 710 KNUS. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, joined by Rich Sokol and Greg Brophy, Joshua Scharf behind the glass. It was an interesting conversation with Isaac Smith. That is a huge issue, the Colorado Democracy Alliance. And this article in The Statesman that Isaac mentioned, which I recommend that you read. Again, I'll link to it on my website later. You should be able to Google it. Campaign Finance in Colorado, Where's the Money? Fascinating story about this complicated network of organizations that the left has created. And they have this one woman who is the registered agent for all of these groups. And this article is written in October. It says, as of October 18th, the 10 most active committees that this woman, whose last name is Wells, manages, had brought in $7.8 million in contributions, with $7.42 million of that coming from so-called large donors, which is a few rich people, but mostly unions. And, you know, I wonder, Greg Brophy, whether the impact of that money or whether you think it's other factors or most likely some combination of factors led to not just the result we saw in Colorado, but how different the result was from what we might have expected looking at the polls. And, you know, Ken Buck appeared to be up. Tom Tancredo appeared to be down by small single digits and lost by 13. Ryan Frazier in the 7th Congressional District, running against Ed Perlmutter, the district in which we're sitting right now. I thought he was going to win. I mean, at least most people thought it was close, and he lost by, what, 11? So, and really remarkable misses. What's your take on why the polls were so wrong?
You know, I was a little shocked also by how far out they were with regard to Tancredo, and I don't think anybody has a good explanation for that. I mean, you know, the polls, there's some new technology in polling that's being heavily used because it's just so much cheaper. It used to be if you wanted a really good, reliable poll, you had to pay about $10,000 to have live workers call registered voters and ask them a series of questions to determine who they're going to vote for and who they're not going to vote for and things along those lines. $10,000 is a lot of money if you want to do it three or four times during a campaign cycle. And when you think about it, I mean, you could really move some votes or try to move some opinions with some mail pieces and some cable TV or radio ads on with that kind of money. Now there's some new stuff that is more automated push button polling. I still think it's pretty good because we actually tested it up against some of the live answer calls and trying to determine how close we thought the new automated polling was, and it's substantially less expensive. So you feel a little bit better about using it more regularly on your races, especially state house and state senate races. But it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're running for Congress, you're running for governor, whatever it is you're running for, you know, resources are precious when you have to go out and beg people for $400 at a time or $1,000 at a time. On our state senate races and state house races, you know, the crosstabs indicated that about a third of the unaffiliated voters still hadn't made up their mind 9 days before the election was held. And in a lot of these races that I was talking about earlier tonight, where we lost by 500 votes, you know, that's about a point or a point and a half in some of these things. We thought we were up by 2 points and we ended up losing by a point and a half. But honestly, that's within the margin of error on those polls.
You know, let's one of the other issues in all of these elections, and especially when you look at stuff like Harry Reid in Nevada, you get this question of vote fraud. And I want to go to the phones. I think Jack in Golden is interested in that same topic. Welcome to the show, Jack. Are you with me? Well, we're having a little trouble here getting Jack on the phone, but. Let us, Greg, why don't you tell us, you know, I think Jack wants to ask about voter fraud. Do you have any sense of that here in Colorado?
Well, you know, in the last election cycle, we had a race where we thought we were up by 50 votes going, you know, at the end of election night, or up down by 50 votes. And the Democrats actually went out and were able to cure more of those ballots that we were talking about earlier, those absentee ballots where the signature wasn't quite right or things along those lines didn't match up, and ultimately ended up picking up a very narrow victory in that seat. I guess I'm a huge Hugh Hewitt fan, and as Hugh Hewitt will say many times and even wrote the book about it, if it ain't close, they can't steal it. And I am always worried that it's that if you leave it up to the lawyers and the Secretary of State, for instance, to make the rules with regard to what ballot is going to be counted, and you have a Democrat Secretary of State, as we do for the next 2 months here, that they'll make the rules up in a manner that favors Democrats. I haven't observed a lot of that in Colorado, but then again, in Colorado, we haven't had a lot of these recounts going on.
Well, let's try the phones again and try to get the question directly from our caller. Jack, are you with us now? Let's, I don't know, we're still having some phone gremlins here. If Joshua can get Jack on the air in the minute or a half, there we go. Let's try that. Jack, you with us?
Sounded like I went on that time.
Yep, you are. So fire away. What's your question?
Well, look, I mean, if you look out across the western states, Washington State, the Senate race up there, and Nevada, notoriously with Harry Reid, and then some other races out across the country, and the fact that Buck was up 4 or 5 points and now he's down 1 or 2, I start wondering about this stuff, because I know it goes on. The question is to what degree, and does it go on here in Colorado?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the Connecticut governor's race also appears to looks like it'll be stolen by the Democrats.
Exactly.
Greg,
that happened to Rossi up in Washington 3 times.
Yeah.
That poor guy. I don't know why he would even run for office again. You know, I did get some reports earlier in the evening. We were talking about a very close race for House District 61 over on the Western Slope. And I did get a report from a poll watcher over there that at 2 o'clock in the morning, that some of the workers for the county clerk dropped, a box or two of ballots that then broke open and fell out onto the floor. And so people were nervous about whether or not they were kicking some of those ballots underneath the shelves. I got to tell you, we watch fairly closely here. And I suppose if you need 20 votes to win and you have a very activist Democrat clerk or Secretary of State, I'd be really, really worried about it. In most of these races, they're far enough apart that I don't think they can steal a race when there aren't that many ballots that can be counted.
Well, again, let's just take Buck as an example. He was up by several points, according to almost all the polls, 2 to 5 points, depending on who you talk to, or 1 to 5 points, let's put it that way. And at the end, he goes down by a point, you know?
Yeah. Jack, we have to hit a break here. What I would suggest to you, though, is if you look how much the polls missed by with Buck, And then you look at the result in the seventh with Ryan Frazier losing by 11 points in a race that people thought was close. I think, as much as I would like to believe that there's fraud,
I think we're
just talking about what Greg Brophy was saying before, that a lot of undecided voters broke to the left in the last few days for one reason or another. Thanks a lot for the call, Jack. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you for the show.
Stay with us right here on Backbone Radio. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk about, was this election a vote for Republicans against Democrats or what? Stay with us.